This is the sixth wheel of a tape interview with Eric Millen
in his home in Perth, Western Australia,
on the 31st of the 1st, 2003, at the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Peter, we're obviously talking about the change in your location. You were to be sent to Italy, so can we talk from that point, please?
Perhaps we could talk about just prior to the move to Italy. We, as a crew, had to get to know our new squadron. Cookie, our pilot, was made CO 55 squadron, so it's a matter of him getting to know the members of the squadron. A lot of practice flying with them, so that they got to know his foibles and he got to know theirs. We did a tremendous lot of cross-country flying, low-level flying, practice bombings, and you name it. It started on the 19th of January, 1944. We were stationed at a place called Cabrit, which was down in the Bitter Lakes area, and we used to fly from there way out over the desert, over into the Sinai Mountains, over into the Oasis country in the Nile Delta, low level everywhere. We did practice bombings and dummy raids on bases on the canal. One particular one that we remember very well was a dummy raid that we had to do on sewers.
They hadn't been warned.
And they hadn't been warned about us, and we went stooging up to sewers and suddenly found we were flying into a whole heap of barrage balloons. It was a Vic of three. We did a split-ass turn and climbed like blazes and just went over the tops of the balloons. It was quite interesting that the mob down below didn't open up on us as well, because they hadn't been warned about us coming up there. These are the sorts of things that kept us on our feet, I suppose, or on our toes. One particular beautiful flight that I can remember very well was one that we went up into the mountains of the, I forget the name of the area, but we flew off very early in the morning, at about 4 o'clock takeoff, and we climbed about 22,000 feet and saw the sun coming up over the Sinai Mountains, and then we dived down and went exploring, and the sun came up again as we were down around about 10,000 feet, flying in and out the area, and we found the ruins of Petra, which is a very old area up in the Sinai Mountains. That in itself was quite an interesting do. We had to practice flying in and out of the mountain ranges. Later on we realised why. If you're doing this sort of flying, you have to be very, very careful. The observer up front is continually telling the pilot what's coming up ahead, and the pilot has to take evasive action. And weaving in and out in the valleys and gorges is quite a nerve-wracking business. We got pretty expert at that. Some of the low flying was particularly terrific. We didn't realise why we had to practice this low flying. One set of crew members came back with the air intake of their motors filled up with vegetation that they'd scraped up off the ground. And it was quite fascinating that the tips of the propellers were all bent a little bit forward. We discovered this fact. We wondered why they weren't bent backwards, but the CO was told to tell us that when you're flying forward and the plane the propellers were going, well, they had to pull you forward, so the bottoms of the propellers were bent forward. That's really getting low. We didn't go quite as low as that. We did a tremendous lot of practice flying with our guns, and I had a new turret with 0.5 machine guns, two machine guns, and I used to fire off lots and lots of rounds of these to the discomfort of the wireless operator who was at the bottom firing his guns down and through the bottom hatch. He used to get the red hot shell cases pouring down over him. And when you fire off a half inch machine gun, the shell cases pour out smoking hot. And poor old Nat used to get terrible burns on his back. Right, all this practice welded us together as a very good crew, I think. And it was around about February that they put us on to night flying, and we did the same sort of thing, flying around at night in the ranges. This was practice runs again. It was preparing us for, we eventually found out, to our move up into Italy. And it was around about this time that it would have been the 6th of March that Italy was mentioned. And here I've got in my logbook, we went on a flight which took us 2 hours, Cabrit, Man, photos of Jordan Valley taken, pictures of Petra, we did this run again, photos taken of the ruins and the Dead Sea, could see snow-capped Mount Hermon, 85 miles away in Lebanon, went to Hebrew, Bethlehem, Jerusalem and landed at Lydda. We could smell the orange blossom at 2,000 feet. It was really something over Palestine, as it was called then. We landed back at Lydda. I've got in the logbook here, from Lydda to El Arish at Cabrit, two Pongo colonels as passengers. The Pongos being a reverent way of referring to the British Army. Around about the 9th, of March, I got put into the base hospital with pneumonia, and I was pretty crook. And Cookie and co. were champing at the bit because I wasn't flying with them. And then one day, on the 21st of March, Cookie came into the hospital with a flying suit. I was in my pyjamas, and said, whack this on. He said, you're coming with us. Put the flying suit on, and he grabbed me out, and Observer was with him, and he was the other side, and they helped me out, took me out, put me into a vehicle. The orderlies were screaming their heads off and saying, he's crook, you can't take him, and Cookie said, well, he's coming. They took me out, put me in the jeep, took me out to the aircraft, bung me into the aircraft, and I took off for Italy on the 21st of the 3rd, 44. And here we see Cabrit to Wadi Natroon and Mirza Matroon. And this is up the way in Egypt, going towards Egypt. We went through into Tunisia, flying over Marble Arch, and eventually we found our way over to Lucca in Sicily, and we landed at Catania. We passed a convoy of about 40-odd ships between Malta and Sicily, and we could see Mount Etna erupting. We were posted as a squadron to a place called Biferno in Italy. We left to go there from Sicily, but had to return because of the tremendous weather. And this is something that we had never encountered before, weather like they had in Italy with snowstorms, thunderstorms, rain, cold. It was absolutely grim, it really was. But it was very, very nice to be in some place where you weren't covered in dust all the time. We landed at our new base at Biferno, which was really something to be able to get there, on the 24th of March 1944. On the way up there from Sicily, we passed these huge convoys of boats that were going into Italy from Malta, where obviously they'd been getting ammunition and people to go on with the invasion of Italy. We did lots of practice bombing runs somewhere south of Foggia. We could see Vesuvius erupting too. We flew over or next door to Vesuvius. The enemy aircraft used to come over and check us out from very, very high up. What happened to them and later on, I don't know, because they sent aircraft over to see what was going on. We never got bombed, but some of the mob in other places did have Germans coming in and dropping bombs on them. Our first raid on the 31st of March 1944 was bombing railroad bridges, and we took off from our base at Biferno with 12 bolts of our Baltimore's of our squadron and 12 of 223 squadron, which is our old squadron. And I've got in my logbook here 12 Baltimore's of 223 squadron in brackets, what a formation. I wasn't very complimentary about it. We dropped the usual sorts of bombs, and it got down here very accurate and heavy ack.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, what the situation was in relation to this particular period. The impression I get is that the air is controlled by the Allies at this point.
Yep. We had escorts with the 7 Spitfires. They used to come and escort us. There was plenty of flak from down below, though, because the Germans were retreating and they didn't like it. And so they got their backs up and they really let fly at us. They didn't have any aircraft to back them up, and I can imagine this would have been a similar situation as to what it was when we were in trouble and our ground forces grizzled their guts out because there were never any aircraft to back them up. So now the old Germans are getting it the same.
In relation to that whole situation, the Germans now facing the Allies in Italy, the feeling that you were on the winning side, how did that help you?
Well, at this stage, I couldn't say that we really had that feeling of being very cocky about it all. We knew that the Germans had been got on the run, but they had consolidated. This is the thing. They had a bloody good commander. I think it was Kesselring. And he got the troops organised to bail up against us, and they did a very, very solid job in consolidating themselves as they retreated. They weren't going to give in, and by Christ, they were going to give us hell as they did this. We had a pretty solid job in going for them. These raids that we did were very useful because they broke up formations. And one of the main things that we did was to cut off their lines of retreat. We used to blast hillsides down so they blocked the roads, and we used to bomb the bridges so they couldn't get over. It gave the poor old Germans a hell of a job. I think what we did was mainly just making it as difficult as possible for the Germans to retreat in an orderly sort of way so that the Allies could come up on the ground and mop them up. I think what they did that pretty well too. The raids that we did, instead of the old blocks of 18, we were now in blocks of 24, and there'd be 12 Baltimores from a couple of squadrons. We used to be escorted by Kitty Hawks, and our main opposition came from very heavy 88mm flak. We couldn't go very high because they do the 105mm flaks. We couldn't go very low, mainly because of the mountains and also the light flak that they put up at us. So we had to fly at about the same height as what we always did before and cock the 88mm stuff. But here in all the raids that we did earlier on in April, they were all railway bridges mainly. It was also necessary that we knocked out a lot of their power supplies. I don't know how we ever got the information, but they must have been pretty good on the ground because they had observers who used to send back messages with plots as to particular spots to bomb. And here I've got down at the raid we did on the 7th of April 44, Pranging hydroelectric power station at Turney, and we had to do that particular power station in Turney, which if I had a map I'd be very satisfied to look where Turney is now, but it was plotted on a map and that was our pinpoint that we had to bomb. And remember, these were daylight raids that we're doing then. We got the power station, and the results were pretty spectacular with sparks and all sorts of things that we see going up during the day. Now, what that power station was supplying, I don't know, but the people in Turney must have been pretty bloody unhappy about it all. There was one particular place that caused us a certain amount of aggro. The Germans had an aerodrome up at a place called Rieti, and we were given the job of bombing that, the aerodrome at Rieti. And I've got here a radon drone on the 8th of April, 44, radon enemy drone at Rieti. Results good. Fire, aircraft, two direct hits on hangar, spit strafe drone, 8 minutes before we arrived, causing one fire, and they joined our escort after the show. Now, this was nice because Rieti was the only fighter base, as far as we knew, that was left up in Italy that had fighters there. So the Spits went in before we arrived and put their fighters out of action. It made our raid on the drone quite fairly easy. It says here, two enemy aircraft seen inside the bomb line, last sighted going north with two Spits close behind. T- target bombed by 12 Baltimores of 55 and 12 Baltimores of 13 Squadron. Escort out 18 Spitfires. Coming home increased to over 30. So they were concerned about the enemy aircraft that were in the area. But after our raid, as far as I know, we never saw any aircraft like that again.
In relation to bombing, particularly bombing during the day, I presume it gives you an idea of what the destruction you're doing. You mentioned the power plant at Terni.
Yeah.
There is, as you, I think, mentioned before, the sort of isolation that you have being in a plane that you don't really know the destruction you're doing. But when you sort of imagine that you're dropping in a place where civilians live,
yeah.
How difficult does that make your job?
Well, we weren't particularly concerned. I suppose we might have been, but we were careful. We were carefully briefed by the powers that be not to drop our bombs indiscriminately on the target area. We were to pinpoint the area, and if we couldn't drop our bombs on that, go and find another target somewhere else. This was really put down our noses well and truly. We must have done some awful damage to some beautiful places. I've read some books in Italy since the war, and I shudder to think how some of the places must have been damaged by the bombs that we and other squadrons dropped. Here is a good one. On the 18th of April, bombing road and railway in Gourds, south of Acciano. Several direct hits, original target, ammo dump at Spoleto, not bombed owing to weather. So we did an alternative, and we bombed the side of the hill, or the gorge, and we filled the whole of the bottom of the gorge up where the road was with the mountain. That was a spectacular effort, that was. And the raiding party, again, consisted of 12 Baltimores of 55 Squadron and 12 of 13 Squadron, escort 16 Spitfires. We saw slight artillery action along the bomb line. Now, the bomb line in Italy kept changing quite dramatically because the Germans would pull out and go like the clappers up Italy, and then find another place to consolidate. And so the bomb line would change very dramatically. I think the people down below in the army had a terribly tough job. The Americans and the... there were the Americans and... Kiwis and the British. I don't think there were any Aussies in them. We had a little bit of time off during April where we just had some breaks and we could go stooging around from our drone and explore the area. And then on the 23rd of April we started bombing again. We found a petrol dump to be bombed at a place called Ferretto. Results observed, a hell of a fire. Party consisted 12 bolts 55, 10 bolts of 13, escort 22 Spitfires. We had slight ACAC. That was nice when we only had slight ACAC. North of Popoli. One aircraft in 13 Squadron hit and returned to base with another aircraft from the same box. So they still had good predictable flak going up, and they managed to pick a couple of aircraft out of 13 Squadron. They did return to base okay. We continued with our bombing raids during April, and the last, well, no, it's not the last. Yeah, the last one in April was an ammo dump north of a place called San Valentino. Results were good. Fire started, all bombs in buildings. 10/10th cloud up to target area, and then the clouds parted and we could see down exactly what we had to bomb. The party consisted of 12 bolts from each squadron again, and we had heavy and light flak over the target area. We foxed this flak by doing climbing and diving turns, so they had their predictions going, but we dived and climbed, and eventually we got onto the target area and caused quite a bit of havoc. And another raid, we had to go and bomb an ammo dump west of a place called Nirola. We couldn't see any results, and this wasn't a very good raid as far as results were concerned. However, we did identify or see two unidentified aircraft over the target area, and the Spitfire escort took off after them, but a lot of very thick cloud intervened, and I think those aircraft got away, so those could have been enemy fighters. Now, April, we're into May now, and here we started our night raids. Now, the start of night intruding was quite fascinating because we were given the specific task of going up into the area north of the bomb line, and our job was to not let the enemy get a moment's peace. They were bombed by day by other aircraft, I think, from the Americans, and our job was night intruding. Now, this was good because we went off and it was more or less we were on our own, and we were given particular areas to patrol, and we had to pick out anything that we could see, and you're it's amazing what you can see at night. And flying up and down inside these valleys was just like what we learned flying up and down inside the Sinai Mountains. We did the first night flight we did was an armed reconnaissance. We've got all sorts of names here. We found some MT. This is motorized transport. At a place called Atri. We had smaller bombs there. We took a load, big loads of 40-pound bombs, and strafing. We strafed anything we could see. Now, one of the best things was to find motorized transport. They weren't supposed to have their lights on, but they couldn't do anything else, poor buggers, because if they didn't have the lights on, they'd go over the edge of these precipitous roads. So they had very low lights, but you could pick them out from quite a good height. And if you picked out a light, you knew that there was a convoy down below. So we would drop a flare, and there would be the MT in a nice line along the road, and you'd see coming in at lower level with all our guns blazing. And you could see Huns jumping out of the transports and diving over the edge of the road into the gullies and places at the side. We got quite a few burners out of this sort of effort. I've got here strafed road north of Pescara and squirted Pescara area harbour. One barge seen in Pescara harbour. Opposition nil. Our efforts at night were mainly concerned finding the Hun and keeping him awake. Now, we would finish in one area and it would be taken over by another aircraft. So